On the tee, Jack Nicklaus.
This is the minute that millions around the world have waited for.
We will allow you to enjoy all of this. They are dancing in the pubs of Dublin. Harrington with an ace.
And we have a shining star at sunset. Rory continues his run to greatness. The return to glory.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Bogeyman Golf Podcast hosted by Michael and Johnny. Masters week is over. The first major of the year is completed. The Chevron Championship on the LPGA Tour is on this week. So there's a back-to-back majors, I guess, if you are big into the men's and women's golf. It's another major week, but let's focus on the Masters, Michael. How was that for you?
I thought it was brilliant. Like, I think some people probably felt they had a little bit less juice at the end because Scotty ran away with it. But I think if you were watching it early enough, there was a lot of juice all around Amen Corner and a few lads that were in with a shout of maybe trying to take him down. But man, just like the quality of Scotty was, it was so cool to watch. You know, some of the shots he played were unbelievable.
Yeah, I guess all the way from Thursday when they also had the late start because of the weather, and then the winds coming up and just the madness that brought, because I guess it really showed that everyone obviously knows and hears stories about how tough Augusta is and how penal it is, particularly around the greens, because there's no rough, obviously, around the golf course. So once that wind got up and you saw guys really struggling with the greens and just even missing on the green in the wrong spot, and if they missed in the wrong spot they'd be absolutely boned, and balls were just rolling back because of the wind and everything to crazy spots. It was madness. It was kind of like what you'd expect to see from like US Open at Shinnecock when they were saying, oh, we've lost the golf course, or at like, you know, at an Open Championship over in the UK when like if it's baked out really hot and really windy and guys are struggling with that. But it was like a weird one to see. You don't really see it with Augusta when like the conditions get up. It's definitely the windiest I've ever seen out there.
Yeah, no, I think the wind, I love it. The windy bit was like listening to caddies and players talking on certain holes and waiting for a certain wind. And, you know, add a club, slow down a swing, take it more of a club. Like, I thought that was just so interesting. And like, that's, I can see lads, we're at Paris, but you can see lads hit shots and stay on the green. I want it to all the majors to be tough. I want to see shots where I've never seen amateurs hit, you know, like, or I love those chips where like they missed the green, they got a chip out 10 foot right because it simply has to keep the ball on the green. Like that's, it has to be a test because they're so good. So either that was really cool. And then also every win that swept through, I think Marlboro got their sponsorship spot on, considering it was mentioned every 5 minutes with the baggy trousers on Jason Day with that win. So I think they'll be sponsoring Sky Sports anytime soon.
No, I thought it was really good. I thought, like, I guess you're dead right when you said, like, if a major is difficult from like just like nature conditions, and so instead of a golf course being tricked up or whatever it is, it kind of, it brings to fore who the really, really good golfers are. And I think it was no accident that like Ludwig was one of the only people to shoot under par and shot the low round of the day on the Friday, shooting the 69. Scotty Scheffler managed to grind out an even par, one under par round in that conditions. Like the best players really did like rise to the top. But I think within that, then at the same time, in the same way for the last few weeks, we've been talking about how the big guys haven't been performing. That trend has just continued again. Rory was poor. Jordan was poor. Victor Hovland was poor. JT was poor. Like, and then John Rahm was just brutal. So bad.
It was terrible. Like,
and compared this to last year, where like it was going to be the first major where the LIV guys and the PGA Tour guys were coming head to head, and there was so much drama to it, and it really delivered, and it was great because Brooks was in the hunt, and they went on and won the next month of the PGA. There wasn't really any of that. After round one, you thought maybe Bryson was going to be that guy, and I was really hoping for that, rooting for that, but not in like a dramatic way that like, or what's the word, controversial way that like Bryson has been in the past. You know, sometimes he has a history of saying something pretty stupid.
Yeah,
he's like, he's a kid. He's like 27. He's like, he's actually just turned 30. Like, he's a young lad. But this time, he actually just played good golf and just made his way around it, the golf course.
Yeah, like, I don't think it was a changing of the guard. Like, when you look at the leaderboard and you've got Omer, Homa, Morikawa, like, I don't think it was now, okay, these are the new ballers and everyone else is defunct. But I think we're still going to go into the PGA with odds all over the shop and not knowing who's playing well and who's in line because of the way it is. So it's still a guessing game. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if Ram or Brooks all of a sudden like won the PGA or came second, because it's so hard to read with the split. I just think that Ram, I think, was all over the shop in his prep and in his mind, his interviews he's given before, kind of saying he wants to go back to 72 holes and stuff. I don't think his head was on Augusta at all, really. And I think when you're looking at mindset, before we get into later, just Homa and Ludvig's mindset was, and Scotty's as well, was just top quality. Yeah. I think that's why they were up the top of the leaderboards.
Was the Masters as good as you hoped it would be?
Yeah, I think it was. I think, listen, if you look back on the majors last year, I thought the US Open was coming out with a wimp, and I thought the Open was fairly poor. So I think it's a good start. There was a little bit of drama. I think people are probably going to be, I don't think people ever gave out that Tiger ran away with tournaments, but I think that just comes down to the personality of Tiger as well as Scottie Scheffler. Like, I text you, I was like, not one, he hasn't given one fist pump, not one celebration, not one, you know, set, nothing. He gave us absolutely nothing. And I suppose that's where, like, we learned out before how nervous he was and how bad he wanted to win. And that was his mindset going into it. I'm not going to show any emotion. But he can be hard to root for. I think Scotty is hard to root for.
Yeah.
I don't think he's a Rory, a Spieth, a Homa, a Woods, in terms of you sit and watch him in a featured group. Like, I watched Tiger. I watched the featured group Sunday morning with Tiger, and now, he wasn't great, but I enjoyed watching him. He left putts short. His touch wasn't there, but he was enjoyable to watch. The only thing with Scotty that is enjoyable to watch, I think, is that you know he's putting the ball within 2-3 feet of where he wants. He's so precise. Like, so anytime he got in a little bit of trouble, his chipping, I thought, was unbelievable. Yeah. And, like, the enjoyment of Scotty is watching him hit shots, but none of the other stuff, which I suppose, when you're looking at what makes a star, that has to go hand in hand. Mm. So I can see why some people were probably a bit bored. But I think it had a bit of everything. It had a newcomer coming in Åberg, where, geez, he nearly could have won it. Like, another day, you know, Scotty misputs a couple of them and he takes fire, he could win it. Homa, kind of, like, I've been fairly harsh on Homa. I've definitely stated on the podcast he's the most overrated player in the world. I definitely said that. Jesus. So I definitely did. And I think he had a really good Ryder Cup and he was really good. In a Masters.
Most overrated player in the world.
Yeah, there was just so much. I just felt there was so much hype about him for someone who hasn't done anything.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he had a top 10 in a major before this.
People were talking about him as, like, one of the big stars, one of the big best players. I mean, he hadn't really done anything.
Yeah.
So I probably gone a bit overboard. But I think that was, it was a really good week for him. And I thought listening to him was so interesting. Like, obviously he's very good behind the camera, and you watch Nole and Oprah and Bob, all those sort of stuff, he's kind of doing bits and pieces and he's very good, but he's a good chatter, and I think he's got that star quality. So to me, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I was in the Colin Morikawa story. You know, I was in that. I was good when he hit it in the water. We've always had this thing where you're more Hovland, I'm more Morikawa. So I think as a whole, the Masters definitely was a good tournament. Recency bias with golfers is always around there, but I think the weather made a big difference as we saw things we hadn't seen before, seeing lads hit shots we hadn't seen, which was really nice. And then, like, we said, lads hit it in the water and deal with pressure. Like, that's what the Masters gets to you. Listening to a few reporters and journalists that were there, they said they were just reporting on it, but they were feeling nervous watching the last groups. Like it's that sort of thing. And the Masters, I think the Masters had it this year.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. I thought, talking about Max Homa, I think Max was kind of just like every other kind of golf fan for the first two rounds, playing golf, being paired with Tiger Woods. And he even said that as much. He said at some points throughout the first two rounds, he just stood there and watched Tiger as a golf fan. Was just amazed by some of the shots that he hit and the way that he was able to get around it. I don't know how much more we're going to see of Tiger Woods at Augusta, kind of competing. Obviously, like Olathabal made the cut and he made the weekend and actually ended up shooting a better score than Tiger in the end. But like, as the four rounds got on, you just saw that Tiger was just getting like just more tired and in more pain as each hole went by. But I think the Scotty and Tiger comparisons are a very interesting one, because you're dead right. I think whenever Tiger ran away with the tournament, or if he had a major comeback or did whatever, yeah, he hit the incredible golf shots like Scotty does at the moment. But then you're dead right. He's like, you know, he's chasing after the ball as it was going club into twirling, the hole.
Club twirls, yeah. Martins, fist pumps.
Like two-handed fist pumps as he chips in from 16. Like, there's so many iconic moments from Tiger that accompany the shots that in the end actually, I think, make the shot. Like if Scotty hit, let's say like Tiger's chip on 16, if Scotty hits that and doesn't react the way that Tiger reacts by going absolutely berserk and having the commentators shout in your life,
yeah,
it's just another chip in. But because of the way Tiger reacted to it, it becomes an iconic golfing moment. And I think we're at a little bit of a risk of losing those types of moments right now, because the best player in the world and the best players in the world aren't giving us that extra emotive aspect to golf. Right now, it's just like Scottie Scheffler goes, yeah, if I hit the green on 17 on the left-hand side, I know it's fine. If I miss it on the back right-hand side, I know it's going to bounce off and it's going to go long. So I'm going to hit it in the back left portion, and I'll do that every time. And it'll be a great shot. But that's it. There's no like fist bumps. There's no, you don't really see what it means to him, you know?
Like, so I watched, it was last night, I watched every, so Masters put videos, 14 minutes of every shot of Scotty's round, final round. And like, people don't get me wrong on this, like the quality he's striking golf with is phenomenal.
Oh yeah, no one is calling to question that.
The top tracer on the shots, they're dead straight when he needs them to be, there's a little bit of cut when he needs to be, there's a draw when he needs to be. But like that, it's just a little flat. So, you know, I think from an entertainment point of view, in terms of the stuff around it, I think we're lacking a little bit with Scotty. But I mean, having said that, I personally don't think he's now going to run away with something like Tiger did. I think in golf, I was thinking about this, that if you have a quality football team and they win the Champions League, and so I reckon they could do two in a row, there's very little problem of that team falling off a cliff, bar an injury, bar the manager getting sacked, whatever. In golf, Scotty could turn up next week and putting be gone. Or he has a slight injury to his shoulder, so, or something like that, and it's gone. And I think you have to strike when the iron's hot. If you think when Speed started winning, we all thought it was going to last forever. When Rory won four majors, we thought, this is it. He's going to win 10 in a row. Morikawa won two majors. We were like, oh my God, this is Tiger. Look, he's Asian as well. This is the second coming of the Messiah. And he fell off trying to hit a draw to get into Masters, and he's climbing back. Like, he parted ways with his coach recently, his second coach, and he recently rang up his coach from like high school and gone, I need to go back to my fade, because he tried to hit a draw to win at the Masters and make the next step, and it derailed everything. So I found watching him in the second final group was so entertaining. I mean, hitting that in the water, and yeah, like, he's a bit like you, he swore and he had to like hit the club down, he was so annoyed, and his comments, I got a bit greedy, and I was like, I can feel why you're so annoyed, but I can also see why you got a little bit greedy. Like, that makes so much sense. So I think with Scotty, I don't see any weaknesses in the game, and listen, someone who understands golf swing better than me will probably say it could be this or could be that, but he's gonna have a kid soon. I mean, when you look at golfers and when they have a kid, it can sometimes really derail them, like Speed, because your focus changes. You put other stuff on. You can't just go practice 6, 7, 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
So Scotty's gonna have that. And I think from all the interviews, Scotty wants to be a good father, and he wants to drop the kids to school, does the playground stuff, wants to be involved. So who knows what that is gonna do after that. So I think the only two people that you could say were just got in and kept one was Nicklaus and Tiger, and for different reasons. Tiger was an obsessive on getting better and have 1,000 hits of a golf ball every day, and it was win, win, grind. Nicklaus was very, I play my golf, I go home, you know, to Barbara, and I do my stuff, I go back and play golf and I win. But I think, and this idea that Scotty could win all the majors this year, like, his wife's going to give birth anytime soon. We have the PGA in a month, in 4 weeks. If it's 2 weeks, she gives birth in 2 weeks, then he's got, that would be his paternity leave. Like, so would he go, oh yeah, I'm going to leave every day? Like, that's a tough decision. It's tough for him, especially when you can feel him looking forward to being a dad, wanting to be a dad, saying
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and he's such a family man.
Yeah, and he said, if I'm the last son and winning this and, you know, his wife goes into labor, I'm gone. Don't care. So I think it's an interesting term with time with Scotty. And if I was someone like a Homa or a Morikawa or even a Bryson or, you know, anyone looking at Pat going, let's not just go, oh, that's it, game over now. Scotty's just going to run away with this. There's a couple of things I think that could happen with Scotty, and you know, that you could catch on to and sneak a major off.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, two big things for me on that point is, like, the putting thing doesn't seem to really be a problem now. It seems like he's settled into that work that he's doing with Phil Kenyon, and that seems to be okay. Plus, also he's been unbelievable now for over a year.
And the bear hug he did on the 18th, like.
But Scotty's now been so good for over a year, for over 52 weeks. That, like, if you look at John Rahm and the run that he went on, or even like the run that Rory went on a couple of years ago, it was like 4 months, 5 months max. Because, like, naturally you get tired. Like, there's no way you can run at that, like, you know, red line for a prolonged period. So either his ability to run at that red line is much greater, or his baseline is just so much higher that he's running at, like, we'll call it like 85, 90% now. And if he just drops it down to 75%, he's still winning like PGA Tour events, or he's still contending for PGA Tour events. The biggest thing I do think is, I agree with you, is like what fatherhood will do to him, just because everyone who's had a kid as an elite athlete has spoke about, you go from, especially as an individual sport, you go from being the most important person in every situation and in every room to now the least important, because there's the kid, there's the mother, and you're just there to support both of them. And I think that's probably a big mental shift that an elite athlete from an individual sport needs to get around. And we'll see how that works with him. But, like, he's very open about how he's very religious, and how so is Ted Scott, his caddy. And it's like he was talking about the morning of the final round. He and his friends were talking about the Masters and about potentially winning. And he was saying how he wished he didn't want to win as much as he did. And then one of his friends was like, you know, you need to just accept that and understand that you've already won in life. You know, it's preordained, or whatever the exact phrasing was. Basically, was that, like, you've already won in life. You're in a great place. If you win this tournament, that's just cherry on top. Having that kind of higher power faith or even just a belief in anything bigger, I think seems for him, I don't think it's for everyone, but for him, it seems to be a freedom that he can then just go and play golf, because he's just like, win, lose, who knows what's going to happen. It's already going to happen. It's already preordained. And he's very, very vocal about the fact that his identity is not wrapped up in how he plays his golf. Whereas I think if you look at, like, Rory, he tried to do that a few years ago. He tried to say how, like, his personality is not wrapped up in how he plays golf. But for this particular 1 week of the year, his entire identity is wrapped up in the fact that he hasn't won at Augusta.
Yeah, I think if we're talking about the mindset, as, like, you know, I'm kind of all in on, like, I would be kind of an armchair sports psychologist fan. So I love the kind of idea of it. The Wyndham Clark stuff from the Netflix documentary I found so interesting. And now Holmes is working with that same sports psychologist. at home, I thought was so good. Two things that he said that I thought were absolutely excellent. That the minute he started thinking about a bad thing that could happen, like, oh, hooking it left into the water, he had this trigger in his mind to go, well, the minute I start thinking that, I'm thinking of the good thing that could happen. Oh, imagine I hit a draw here and it rolled in, and it was keeping him calm. The second thing, and like, first of all, he said he was writing in a journal. Listen, I'm not a big journal guy, but I know a lot of athletes that have journals and goal setting, and they would write their feelings and how all this sort of stuff in. If it works for them at home, is they having a journal. And the second thing he said was, I came here with the gratitude and appreciation that I get to do it. I'm happy I get to do it tomorrow. Like, if you can hone that mindset of going, is I have the opportunity to go and try win a Masters. Like, that, yeah. I'm so grateful just to have the opportunity, as opposed to, oh shit, I'm in contention, I really need to win this, or what happens if I don't? It was just that I'm like, your gratitude, and you're thanking everyone that you get to have this pressure, because it could be a million times worse. You ask the amount of stars that missed a cut this week that we all had back to anyone below 30. Like, they'd all go, Jesus, I'd kill to be going into the last round, final round with a sniff. And I think Tiger's interview after his second round, when he was on one, was he one under, was he even or one over? And his answer to the question was, I have a chance. And I was like, it's a slim chance. You're seven shots behind. You're not playing well. Your putting's poor. You're leaving everything short. But he was just going, like, his mindset was like, there's a chance. Mm. And that's all you need. And I think mindset has been really big for those lads. And I know we'll do a deep dive into Rory, but I think that's something that's massive for me. And it just, with Homa, and the same thing then with Scotty, as you said, his identity, you know, isn't in terms of he's the Masters champion. There's so much more to him. And I think that's something that he's able to decompartmentalize his mindset from winning and not winning.
Yeah. And that's actually a really, like, to separate who you are and your identity from what you do is actually a really, really difficult thing. Like, I was even talking about this yesterday. I was at an event in Killeen Castle, tourism event, promoting the golf course and some of the big announcements that they have over the next coming weeks. And people were asking, you know, how's the podcast going, this, that, the other. And I was actually just coincidentally talking about, you know, it's great, and talking about people and how, if people ever like recognize us or talk to us about the podcast, that like my identity in particular is very wrapped up in this podcast and in golf in particular. Like, whenever we go to a family event, my in-laws, you know, everyone asks me about golf because to them, I'm the golf guy. So then multiply that by 100 or 1,000 to be at like the top 0.01% of elite golfers. Of course, your identity must be wrapped up in how you play golf and in the sport that you do and how you perform. So to be able to separate who you are from what you do at that level is an incredibly tough task. And to see Max and to see Scotty, and even to see Ludwig kind of be able to separate it and handle it in such impressive ways that they did is actually a really, really interesting thing to watch. And I think if we were able to get a sports psychologist on to talk about it, particularly if someone who works with elite athletes like those guys, I think that would be a fascinating insight into how they perform and how they can separate their identity from what they achieve. And I guess what that means as well in terms of being able to go on to achieve bigger things.
Yeah. And like, I think what you've mentioned over is so true. Like, I think what people aren't realizing is that we've had some players on from in the collegiate stuff in America, but like, it's the college stuff, I think, has to take a big load of credit for making these guys professional. Like, we've talked to Sarah Byrne, we've talked to a few people, and they say, well, our day starts with this, and then we have to do this, and then we go to college, and then it's chipping for this time, but then it's mental stuff. And they're looking, because sport is so big in America, they're looking at the golfers going, well, if we're doing this with American footballers and basketball players, let's bring us into the golfers.
Yeah.
And I think everyone who's graduating now from that American college stuff is so well prepped as an athlete, not only athletically, but mentally, and also in terms of pressure environments. And we've always said that, why are Irish players always been really good at the Ryder Cup, even though they haven't been, you know, top drawer? Like McGinley, for example,
yeah. No one,
he was a major champion, but man, like, given that, making him, remember I don't know, was it Celtic? I'm going to say Celtic Manor. I'm not sure where he gave the put away. Mm. And then he was like, well, and it was just, it's in his mind. I knew I had to make my put now. I was going to win because they played match play and it was nearly Irish people had now gone into this repetition. So I think it looked like nothing fazed A. Burke. Like it was, I don't think a lot of people have kind of just let it sink in. Not only is it your first major, it's your first Masters and your first major. Yeah, you've played in Ryder Cup and everything, and you're only one of the favorites. So people are kind of talking about you as you might win or sneak it. Then you end up in one of the last groups, and then you put a run on that if Scotty wobbles, you could win. What is it? And I think the great picture of him smiling after he had the bogey or double bogey?
Yeah.
I mean, you could see in his mind he was
double bogey on 11. Yeah.
And he was like, you could see his mind, he was kind of like, obviously him and his caddy knew, right, we're going to press here or we're going to try this. But they knew that it's not going to work out. We could be in trouble. But it was kind of like, so be it. Like,
I'm 24. I'm in second place at the Masters, my first major of the year. Like, I was in college 10 months ago, and I played my Ryder Cup. Like, I'm going to be okay. I'll survive coming second to the greatest player in the world at the moment by a wide margin. You had a great tweet actually earlier on the week when both Nikolai Højgaard and A. Burke were up the top of the leaderboard with Luke Donald just being very, very smug when everyone was questioning him picking A. Burke and Højgaard over like the likes of Moronku. I think he came like dead last.
Yeah, I was sitting there and I was like, you had left some Peroni in the house. I was having the Peroni. I was like, I wonder if Luke Donaldson having a nice Italian Peroni, thinking, oh God, I made the right call. but even that, I don't think Ludwig, after the round, sat and went, and when he was reflecting, because I think they all reflect now. And that's just something where it's not just like where you and I sit and have a beer, but I go, oh man, if my putting was better, I would have played better. Or if you're like, geez, if I just could chip to here, I would have gone under. That's just us talking crap, you know, on a game. But they're reflecting on, well, how did I feel? What was my mental state? Why did I like all that? So I'd say he sat down and he went, didn't even look at what you said, that Scotty's so good and it was my first one. I just thought that was a tournament. Gave it a good shot, didn't win. Grand.
Get the next one.
Yeah, and it's not even like, oh, it's my first one. I don't think when he's, let's say, I just generally don't think the way he's set up as a player and as what I'm, obviously I'm looking, I don't know him, but if he's in his 32 and he hasn't won the Masters, I don't think he's going to feel the pressure of having to win. It's going to be, I'm going to have another crack at this, lads, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's where the mental side of those lads, and now with Homa, will Homa win a major? I don't know. I don't think I'll ever be picking him as a favorite, but if he won a major, I wouldn't be surprised. But I think his mindset is now kind of go along that, is that like, I'm a journeyman and I shouldn't have all this pressure of having to win. You know, he's just like, if it happens, it happens. Great. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Kind of like Clark, I would say.
Sure.
That, you know, where it's like, yeah, he's a great golfer and on his day, you're great. But if you pick up a major on the way, happy days. There is one person, though, that I was semi sort of, I've never watched a tournament and gone, I hope this guy moves from sixth to second, right? Because to me, you win or you don't, right? Like if the lads come sixth in the Masters or second, you're like, okay, it doesn't really matter, really. But Tommy Fleetwood,
Before you get into Tommy, because that's a whole other conversation. I don't actually think we've given Ludwig like just the level of respect that he deserves for what he did. Like, also exactly. you're talking about him there, but like just for context, he came into the final round, what, two shots behind? He was 5 under. Scotty was 6 was 7 under. He was tied for the lead early into the round. And was just looked like he was having the absolute like a ball of a time. So it looked like he was having so much fun. He had Joe Swanson on his bag, like a new-ish caddy for like this for the last few months. He had Jack Clark on the bag for the year-ish, was a that he was a, that he was a pro. The six or seven months he was a pro. Jack was on his bag when he won on DP World Tour. Jack was on his bag when he played Ryder Cup. But he's definitely up the level, and he was, you know, like it's tough on his caddy Jack that Aberg at a very young age goes, I want a caddy who has major experience, and dumped Jack and has now got a seasoned caddy on his bag. And I think that was another layer of comfort for Aberg, that he was just like able to rely on his team around him, and then that freed him up to just do what he does best, and which is play golf. So like I was saying, he's up tied for the lead early in the round, and then that one swing on 11, that cost him the entire tournament. But even he said afterwards, it was just a bad swing. Like, you could see he was aimed up way to the right of the green. He was planning to miss it where Scheffler missed it. And his goal was just, like, that was his play. Play it to the right side of the green. If it rolls up under the green, we've got a 25 or 30 foot putt for par, for birdie. We'll make par, we'll walk away. Worst case scenario, I got a chip up, get up and down, make par. Worst case scenario, make bogey, but we're okay. We can still par. We can still birdie 12, par 13, 15. If we have to, we can make a birdie on 17. And push this, and it was a tough swing, like ball above your feet on 13. Everyone knows that 13 is, or 11 is, so tough in that way, that like Nick Faldo hitting that two iron or three iron, whatever it was, back in the 90s to a couple of feet at 11. Like, the reason that shot's iconic was because it's so hard. The ball's above your feet. Everything yeah. wants to go left off of that kind of lie, and then having water to the left, just it gets in your head, and. That's exactly just what happened to him. But then to be able to regroup with birdies on 13 and 14, and then 15 for me was actually, that was a moment where I was like, okay, like he could really do something. Had a bad swing off the tee, but just his ability to bounce back, where he just pitched it forward, managed to get it through, had like a little gap, like a door size gap through yeah. some trees, chipped it on, and was so unlucky with the bounce that he got on the pitch onto the green, where it just rolls to the back edge of the collar. Yeah. And like he had that putt, and like he aimed it lovely, and it just straightened up for him a little bit too soon, burns the right edge of the hole. That would have been birdie, and that would have been, like, he still would have been two shots back of Scottie Scheffler. But two shots and three shots when you're Scottie Scheffler walking down the last three holes, like, that's a big difference. Like, one shot's a big difference, especially considering Scotty went into the bunker on the right hand side. Like, he played the correct bailout into that bunker. But like, let's say Aberg makes that birdie putt and he's two shots behind Scheffler. Scheffler now knows he needs to make par in this hole. And it's not an easy enough par hole from where he is in the bunker. And two, you can easily send the ball along down into that little hollow, and you've got yourself a really, really tough two putt to make par. So like the extra pressure that birdie putt from Aberg would have made was massive. And unfortunately, Scotty Scheffler then just made an unbelievable birdie on 16 to just absolutely close it out. But Aberg is just, for me, he is next level good. Like, I don't think it's really, really hard to like see how dominant he's going to be, but I think he's going to, like, he's definitely going to be ranked like four or five in the world now after this. Like, he probably played in the RBC again, and you'd see him win in RBC.
I think he's gone under the radar of everyone because everyone's just accepted his class. Like, the minute Luke picked him, I think everyone went, oh, like, Donald's only picking him because he's incredible. Like, they just went, okay, let's park that. Let's discuss other people. And then he wins and he wins and he does well and he wins. And then it's like, but I think you're right. I hate the term generational talent, because I think there's just so many talented players out there. And there's so much more to golf than just the swing, and that is all there. But I think, like, if we jumped into the future 10 years and he has won the Grand Slam, you'd look back now and go, Jesus, yeah, I can see where he's coming from. But having said that, sometimes it can be so hard to win, you know?
Yeah.
How many majors is he going to win? It's such a tough question. Like, I could see him. I think I could see him winning three.
Well, okay. Here's a great comparison. He's what, 24-ish years of age, right?
Yeah.
10 years from time, he is Roy McIlroy's age. He's 34 years old. Will he have more majors than Rory does at 34 years of age?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so too.
I'm putting it down to mentally. I think mentally he's ready to win, but he's not I don't think his aim and be all and end all is to win either, which I think gives him a superpower. Where I don't like if he missed, like if he loses one, I don't think he's devastated and we don't see him for a month. He just goes, yeah, cool to see. Like I got close. That was golf. You know,
yep. I'll put better
next week and we'll give it a shot. And I think that's, it's so easy to say than done. You know, like one of the times, like I said this to you, we played a while ago and for some reason your driver was acting up and you were so frustrated. And I was like, I'm not going to give you any swing tips, Johnny, because I don't know about it. And you were just telling me, and I was like, I was just saying, would you like this here and here? And I'm kind of just this, and normally I feel this, and I want to feel like that. And I went, okay, cool. And I just went, and then I remember saying to you, I was like, man, don't overthink this. Like, the next time you play, it'll be gone. And then you play, like, you text me because you played yesterday, and you were like, man, I played so well, and I played under my handicap, and that thing with my driver just wasn't there. And I'm like, it's so easy to look back in hindsight and me to go and see, Johnny, why are you getting so annoyed? Just relax, you're going to play great the next day. But it's so hard to do that. Yeah. But I think Ludwig has that where, you know, and I think mentally, yeah, man, like, I don't know. Like, Grant, I think it'd be a nice number for now. I think I can see him winning three. But having said that, I thought Markow was going to win about 7 or 8. You know, so
yeah.
It's a tough one, but you know, even with his desperate Dan chisel jawline, Ludwig has, you know, I think he's there's definitely big star quality there. Like, you know, yeah. he's a good looking boy, so I think he can easily be a poster boy.
Let's move on to Tommy Fleetwood. I agree with you. I think Ludwig is going to win more. I think Ludwig will probably end up winning more majors than Rory overall by the end of his career.
Yeah, and just with the major count, I think is so different to before, where I think if you look back on the times of Faldo and, you know, Seves, those lads, Seves and Montes, and you're kind of going, okay, we were seeing them every week, and it was, oh, there wasn't big surprise as much surprise when it was this is on form, let's play. Now you've got the Koepka thing where no one knows what everyone is doing. Like, if Koepka comes in and wins the PGA next month, no one is surprised.
No.
Because you're like, oh, that's Koepka. That's what he does. You know? So there's way more out of nowhere, whereas before, and I think that comes with the game of golf, whereas before it was, no, you hit the middle of the fairway, even though, like, now it's like, just hit it, and then it went through, hit it as far as you can. And if, I remember, you know, I remember playing with old guys, and you'd be pulling out the driver, and they're like, ah, silly mistake there, boy. Take your four iron, put it in the middle of the fairway. That's how you play golf. You don't smash a driver and come out of the rough. And then that's completely changed. So I think you can easily see that happening now with, in terms of who will win majors. But like, man, Tommy Fleetwood, I was like, come on, Tommy, another birdie. Come on, get close, push up that leaderboard. One of the main things is, like, we all love Tommy Fleetwood, but it was the caddy story was unbelievable.
Yeah, having the local caddy on the bag, because obviously Ian Finnis is obviously quite seriously unwell.
He's quite well. So I thought Tommy, instead of going to get, you know, a buddy of his or a friend who he could use as a caddy, like some people do. He decided to want to get one of the Augusta caddies. But of course, I presume Tommy was giving him 10% or 12%, 8%, whatever he was giving him. And I was like, Jesus, like, this is going to sort your man's life out. Like, this could pay off this guy's mortgage. It could, you know, set him up, he could be his retirement plan because of this one weekend. So I was really gutting for Tommy. And I just think as a guy, I'd say he's such a nice guy to caddy for or to play with, because he just seems so genuine and down to earth. So I was really pulling for him to get up into fourth and to third and really try and go. But man, Tommy is a funny one. I think there's probably, he's kind of one of those guys that, like, he's everyone's second or third favorite golfer. And if you go and he goes and he wins a major, like, I don't think there'd be one person would be unhappy. Like, if he wins the Open in Troon, I think every single golf fan on every podcast, on every Instagram, whatever, every YouTube would be like, oh, delighted. And it would be one of those opens where you replay it for years, kind of like Shane's one. I don't think there's any fan that is you know, doesn't love if that comes on the TV watching Shane or Port Rush. I think Tommy would be in that category.
Yeah.
I'm really, really starting to worry, is he ever going to do it?
Yeah. Don't think so. Like,
his career would be beautiful. One major, doesn't matter what it is, one major, his Ryder Cup success, all that sort of stuff. I'd be delighted. I think if, kind of like Fowler, if he doesn't win one, there's just that thing hovering over going, oh, really, like, so disappointing if him or Fowler don't win one.
And I don't think it's just like Colin Montgomery, you know? He never won one, never won the PGA Tour. Like, it's actually just like an exact replica of his career so far. Very, like, now Monty, some people liked him, some people thought a little less of him. Whereas Tommy, everyone's a big fan of Tommy Fleetwood. I think that goes without saying. I don't see him getting it done. You're talking about Åberg. I think Åberg could pop off like a couple of PGA championships and a US Open or two.
Without breaking a sweat.
Yeah. Whereas I think there's too much depth in golf at the moment for you to comfortably say, I think Tommy Fleetwood will pop off a PGA championship or a Masters or a US Open. I think you'd say he would be more of a favorite at an Open in somewhere like Troon, where if it gets firm and fast and baked out and windy, that he would be a man to just grit it out. But even then, we just saw what Brian Harman did, you know, and there's so many people guys that could do that just as well as Tommy Fleetwood, if not better, that I think he'll hang his hat on a very, very good Ryder Cup career. And I don't see him kind of moving beyond that, which is so disappointing because, again, everyone loves Tommy Fleetwood.
Yeah. So another thing I'm going to kind of not call you out on, but I'm going to be happy that you matured in your, I always like someone who has an opinion and they're happy to go back and go, actually, my opinion has changed, but because of these reasons, I wasn't wrong at that stage. But so you were very much in the Bryson camp this week.
Yeah.
Whereas before, you'd be quite bullish on him, that you weren't a big fan of him, etc. But you were, you know, you were kind of rooting for him for a little bit.
Yeah. And I think, you know what, it's kind of a case of, if you don't see it all that often, you end up missing it. So we saw Bryson on the PGA Tour a lot. He and Brooks had that kind of head-to-head where they didn't get on great. They weren't mates. Bryson had a habit of saying some really stupid things, like talking about like air density, ball density, the spraying. Like, do you remember that image of him spraying water on the golf ball from the driving range? You're like, come on, like, what are you doing? Come on. I think he's matured a little bit. Obviously, he bulked up. Obviously, he's bulked up and he's eaten. He was eating everything for a couple of years, and he was more like the Michelin man than an athlete. But he's trimmed down now, and he's acknowledged that he's like, look, that was a mistake. But like, no one else is doing that, and that was why it was entertaining. And then now, when he goes off and joins, plays live, you don't see him, and then you miss it. You're like, well, I kind of liked having someone saying some mad shit.
And I think. I also completely respected him when he apologized for saying that the Masters was a par was 67, I think he said it was.
Yeah.
I think the maturity of him to be like, yes, I was wrong. I know what he was trying to get. He meant distance wise, you know, not so much the toughness of it, but it was a rod. It was just been a rod to beat him with.
Yeah.
And I think I straight away sent you that picture of him carrying the sign around across that. I was just like, this man is just set himself up for memes,
You love that because, obviously the reason for him picking up the sign, which everyone saw, was like he blew a drive onto another hole, and then had to play up the other hole, and the only line that he had, like through the trees and up the hole, was like this signpost was in the way, and it's technically a movable object, so it like a steward was moving it, and you can see on the broadcast like this 70, 80 year old steward tried to pick it up and put it back in place. And Bryson's clearly a strong young lad, so naturally I'd say he's just like, I'll just take it. Where's it going? And someone caught it on camera. And it's just, it's so brilliant. Funny. It's like, so to, funny. To like, I'd love if he leaned into that. And if he goes at the PGA Championship junior practice round and just picks up something else. And just starts walking. Because it's like, just poke a bit of fun at yourself and have a laugh at it. I think it's great.
To me, I love Royce McTavish lad that'll have that framed in his downstairs bathroom. You know, like just in his downstairs toilet has a couple of, like not him with majors, just random like funny things from his career. One of them is helping the sign. I think
him going two-fisted at Bay Hill.
I think that would be good.
Yeah, listen, and he's also a good golfer. Like let's not take that away from him. I think if he won it, he'd be very interesting. And like,
I wonder what size jacket he'd have to have. They'd have to get him a big jacket.
Yeah,
like he's a big dude.
He is a big dude.
Any special mentions? People that you know you were watching in which you were impressed with or were impressed with how bad they were. Any special mentions?
Ryan Fox off the bat, I loved what he did round one, going 300 there, and then he just had a kind of gradual decline from that moment onwards as the wind blew up. He had a tough second round, but he loves it out there. You know, he got done over on a couple of bad swings in round three, and then I didn't see any of them round four, unfortunately. But yeah, like the second time there, he says he loves it out there. I mean, I'm apart from Tyrrell Hatton, I don't think anyone doesn't love it out there. Tyrrell kind of famously just does not like Augusta, even though he finished tied for ninth.
But then don't come back then. Sick of that. I don't like it. Don't come back. Give your spot to someone else. Yeah. with Foxy, like especially on the first day, I watched him, and it was, if you watch that kind of first round where he goes on a bit of a run, yeah, and then a little mistake, I think it sums up Augusta absolutely perfectly, where if you are not 100% sure on the shot or the shape of the shot or the connection, like you can get in serious trouble very quickly. Whereas if you're on it, I think Foxy's such a good golfer. When he was on it, you were like, he's not going to miss. And then one, like, and it's where in other courses you'll get away with it.
Yeah, you know, you just don't get away with it here.
You just don't get away with that. And I think it was just so cool watching him hit balls because he's got such a unique swing. Like if you put it in black and white and had silhouettes, I tell you which is Foxy's swing straight away, because it's like he gives that ball such a hit in the back of his.
It's such a spanking.
It is. It's like a hurler pucking it out. Like everything goes through it. It's class.
That is. It's brilliant. It is. It's brilliant.
A special mention for me.
He was my main one. Yeah.
You know, a special mention for me would be Neil Shipley, the amateur that got to play with Tiger, was the low am, an absolute barnet of a hair on him as well. And I just, you know, winning the US am and then making the cut and then being told, by the way, you're playing a Tiger. It's just stuff dreams are made of. And a shout out to that journalist who's getting fired for asking Neil Shipley what Tiger handed him in the middle of the fairway in a note or something. And apparently all these green jackets were like looking at the journalist, but like, shut up, like, don't ask that. And Neil was like, no, never happened. So he's probably not going to be invited back.
I've no idea. Like I didn't see any coverage of him doing anything either. So like, no,
I didn't see it either.
It's not like it's not like it was on camera that people could see. But your man's like, I saw him hand you something. Like, what did he hand you? And it could have been anything. It could have just been like my phone number.
He's like, yeah, but it doesn't happen. I'd say it was phone number.
He gave me a bag, you know?
he actually asked me, will I be sponsored by Sunday Red?
Yeah. Here's the marketing manager's phone number.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Tiger Woods CEO. But I thought that was cool. I love that. I think there's something to be said. Like, I know some people are saying that some amateurs have played once or twice and three times. I think something to be said for only getting to, you know, play Augusta once as an amateur. I think Lamprecht has played a couple of times. And
I think Stuart Hagestad played, that was his third Masters.
I mean, we spoke about the crow's nest and stuff. I like the idea that, and it makes, if you're an amateur, you get to play Augusta and you don't turn pro. I think that's your life made that you got to play in the Masters. So I'd like to see a few more amateurs only getting to play there once. And then if you turn pro, then you'd be trying to qualify for as a master to play it. I don't know. That's just my thing. I think if you're an amateur, you get to play three or four times, it's losing the is in the juice, I think.
Yeah. Right. I think the biggest headline from any kind of Irish perspective is Rory McIlroy. So it's another year of disappointment for Rory. He hasn't won the Masters. He hasn't won the career Grand Slam. Every year I say I'm not going to buy into the Rory hype, and every year I end up getting frustrated and hurt by it. So instead of me moaning about it, I just put a question out to our audience on social to get your guys' input instead, and kind of like see what you think, because I've said this a few times, and yeah, it's just, it is what it is. We're also going to go, I'm going to have David Ruddy on the podcast in a couple of days, couple of weeks, to really go into like the swing side of it, but then also like the sports psychology and the sports performance side of it as well. So that'll be a very, very interesting conversation with him. But on Rory McIlroy, right, I ask this. You're Rory McIlroy, another year with another Masters that I win, another year without a major, 10 years without any majors now. Do you and your team sit down and make changes? If so, what? Here amongst the popular opinions: change the caddy, ditch Bannon and spend more time with Butch, join Liv, which I thought was very funny, an entirely new coaching team, new short game team, no media or Liv chat, just complete kind of blackout on all media, a full 6 month break and rebuild, which I think is not the time to do that now, considering we have major every month. New caddy again, commit to a sports psychologist or mind coach, and just an actual change in course strategy and tournament management when it comes to majors. Let's start with the biggest one, caddy. That by a wide margin, people are saying, bin the caddy, get someone reputable, like have someone who's won at Augusta, have someone who's won majors. Like, I'm looking at this here, these responses now. Give Stevie Williams a call. Give Bones a call. Like, these are all good points. And I think points that you and I have both made. I understand Harry is a great caddy. I'm not saying he isn't a great caddy. Two, I understand that he is Rory's friend. And Rory wants a friend on the back. I understand that. My argument to that is, if you had anyone on your bag or any aspect of your game for 10 years and you didn't win the one thing that you are like adamant on winning, that has to be a change. Could you imagine, Mick, if you were coaching your hockey team, your school hockey team, and you were hired on the basis that your goal is to win the SCT for hockey?
Yeah.
And you didn't win it once in 10 years. Surely the school will turn around and go, we're going to try to change the coaching ticket. The same thing, I think, applies to the caddy, because the caddy is the person that has the most exposure to the player and has the most input on the player whilst he's playing.
Yeah.
And yeah, for me, I think Harry's a great caddy. He's brilliant. Like, I think if Harry and Rory split up, I'm positive someone else will take him.
Yeah. It's interesting to know what Rory is like. Does Rory not want Harry talking to him at all? Does he not want him involved in the shots? Does he just want him from information? And is that what needs to change? So, like, I know I've heard Harry does a lot of scope out of the course, and he does what all the other caddies does. Yeah. And there's no way, as Rory's mate, he hasn't left any stone unturned because of a feeling of duty to Rory. So I think Harry's not the fellow who'd be like, I have to be the best caddy out here because I'm doing this for Rory and I'm his mate. I don't want to let him down. So regardless of my money, it's definitely been letting his mate down. But I think there needs to be a complete sit down and meeting and revamp and look at everything, and nothing can be off the table. Like, for example, I even think if the best thing for Rory to win majors would be going to Liv, just bloody join Liv. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think nothing can be off the table in terms of that. I think the new coaching team, yeah, maybe he does go to Butch and Claude, or even, or have a new short game coach. I think, is it being honest with us and the media and stuff? I think definitely pulling away from that made a difference. But then again, you could argue, was it keeping his mind busy that he wasn't overthinking it? I think you've said to me, and I think you're 1,000,000% right, that he's completely in his own head about Augusta. And he's way too involved and inside his own head. He's overthinking absolutely everything. And that's exactly what it is with Augusta, because I think Rory could play Augusta golf course in his sleep. And I think every time he probably goes on a scouting mission, he probably beats everyone he plays, and he plays at 8-9 under par.
Yeah.
No, it's literally dealing with inside his head. So yeah, listen, maybe a psychologist is the way to go. And with that, a psychologist and a new caddy just resets everything.
Because you watched Full Swing season 2.
Yeah.
So do you remember the very first episode when it was on Augusta, it was on the Masters, and Rory, Sean O'Flaherty, his agent, and Harry Diamond were in the locker room, and Rory's like, we need a complete rebuild, we need to blah blah blah, we need to do this X, Y, Z. And Sean, his agent, is actually the one who's just like, I think you're being a bit rash. I think as a team, from what I've seen from that, and then just kind of what I glean from little bits that I see and hear from kind of the tour and from Rory's camp, it's almost like he and his team are afraid to make any big overhauling change. And I don't know if that's out of fear of like, but we're really good, like for the most part, we're just not quite there yet. And I'm afraid of going from like, from up here to like dropping down temporarily to get all the way back up. But then if you look at him at the moment now, like the left miss is a problem with him. His putting doesn't seem to be quite as on. His wedge game is poor at the same time. Like, he's not performing right now. And I think that's kind of an anomaly to a degree, because there are two Rory McIlroys. There's Rory McIlroy in Augusta, and there's Rory McIlroy everywhere else. Like the Rory we saw in Dubai, winning the Dubai Classic, completely different man to who we saw today or this week in Augusta, and that's purely mental.
Yeah, I think that clip is so bang on the money, because you can see him going, I'm not playing the way I want to do. I'm not playing to the standard I'm at that I should be. And I have tried loads of little things. I need a massive big thing. On the other side, you're going, man, you nearly won the US Open. Probably should have. You nearly won the Open in Andrews, but Cam Smith decided to put out of his mind. So you're going,
Rory didn't play well that day either, though.
He didn't, but he was close. So you're going, if we do an overhaul, like I think they're from his team side, you're like, man, if you sneak a major, the pressure's gone and we're back, because it's mental. So if he sneaks a PGA, you know, so there's that fear, and you do, and you become just, you're irrelevant then, and you get out of Ryder Cups and you don't play well. And then I don't think Rory could be, go to from being Rory, as you say, Rory fucking McIlroy, to all of a sudden being a lad where you're like JT, where you're hoping you get a pick on a Ryder Cup. I don't think mentally, from his mental health point of view, he could live with that, because he's never been like that.
No.
And I would be terrified of him on an actual safety level if he goes down to that. So like, you can see the point of both. I don't know, like, but I definitely think a sports psychologist is the way he needs to go, or maybe not a sports psychologist, just a psychologist, because there's, like, as you said, there's loads of stuff that's going on. But I think if I'm looking at him, my plan would be, if I was, say, in his team, I go, man, just forget about the Masters. Let's target the PGA and the US Open. We win, like, let's go and win two of those.
Yeah.
And then Augusta will just happen. And if it does happen, fantastic. If it doesn't, so fucking what? We've got 4+ whatever we've won before. And that's just the way, like, the mindset needs to change, because he's never going to win the Masters the way he's thinking there.
No.
So you might as well try something completely, like, or different. Like, even so far as you could nearly go to try and get a mindset, like, right, you're not playing the Masters next year. And then, what do you mean? No, you're not playing. We're not putting your schedule. You're not playing it. Well, why am I doing it? I could win it. Because, well, you're so over on top of it. You need to learn what it's like to not be there and to stop caring that much about it.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think a big shock needs to happen.
Yeah, and best thing for him would be if he didn't qualify for it. And he saw what he was missing out on.
But I don't think it's like missing out on it. I think it's, as you said it to me before, it's like, he's on like the putting green and you can nearly see his hands shaking, going, I need to go shoot 10 on a par today to win the Masters. And I'm going to do it. I have to do it. And you're like, man, you're never going to play well doing that, ever. Yeah. And like you said, you could nearly write the script now of all the time and what's going to happen. And yeah, so I think something big needs to happen with him. And he might be able to do it behind closed doors. Like, I think when Tiger went on, when he went to Hank Haney and he changed everything, and it was kind of in the open, kind of, geez, Tiger's not playing well, the swing's kind of changing. I don't know if Rory can do that nowadays with social media and stuff, but I think if he is going to get back to winning majors, I think he's got close. But whatever the problem is, stop them winning the US Open against Wyndham Clark. What, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like that issue of why he's not playing well in the Masters is making him get close to big tournaments, but then not win them. And I think it's a mental thing, because he can chase down, like, as you said, how many times is he going to win the Order of Merit of the PGA, the DP World Tour? And it's just like, yeah, okay, great. You can mentally do that, no problem. You know, but it's so frustrating, because we know how good he is. And I still think he is the second coming of Tiger. I still, even though he hasn't won any, I still put him in my category of the most insane golfers I've ever seen. And I know I wasn't in the ear of some of the other lads, but to me, it's like, you are, and he's better than everyone else. So I think, yeah. It's,
what I'd hate to see now would be the pressure of the Masters is off Rory's shoulders, and he goes on an absolute tear. And I would hate to see him go, not hate to see it, but I would just be so frustrated as a Rory fan to see him, if he went on a tear and like won 3 or 4 PGA Tour events now, but like again didn't contend at a major. And you're just like, what are you doing? Like, it's,
I love it though, because there's your answer.
Like, well, I mean, like, I think everyone knows it's all in his head. Like,
no, it is, but I'm like, there you're like, so there, like, either, so then you then just, you're there. If he does that, or even if he plays well in the next tournament and is in the contention, you go, hey, like, go sit down with all the experts and make the decision. How do you keep going like this? And you'll be a tour legend and you win this and win that, but you're not going to go on a run that you need to go on, or you take a massive big thing. And like, maybe it's a break, like he changes his caddy and goes full on with Butch. That could be enough. That alone could be enough. And I think if I'm Rory, I'm running to Butch, because just listening to Butch on the Sky stuff, I don't know that many other like really top coaches, but I just think that, I think the way Butch talks, the way he tells little stories, how he just sees information, I think is, and you need to go to Butch before Butch gets too old.
Yeah, you know? Well, Butch barely travels these days. So, like,
Rory just needs to travel. Rory can play half the tournaments he's playing and spend a month and live in Butch's apartment beside his house. It's just like, you know what I mean? Like, it's, like, as you said, if Rory goes and wins any other PGA Tour, great, don't really care.
It'd be interesting to see now, like, Rory's in the field for the RBC Heritage, which is a signature event. Like, it's a strike again. It's a who's who of what's going on in golf. Scotty Scheffler, Roy McIlroy, Xander Schauffele, Wyndham Clark, Ludwig, Cantlay, Homa, Brian Harman. Like, it's a full field now in RBC. I will be very interested to see what Rory McIlroy turns up.
I agree. He'll still be favorite. Have you got my jingle for the drip watch yet? Or are you still planning on doing it with your mouth?
I'll just keep doing it with my mouth. Da-da-da-da. Drip watch.
Oh man, love this. I think we start with Jason Day and his Malbon, where Augusta asked him to remove his sweater vest.
Do you know how much that sweater vest costs?
It's probably like, is it $300, $400?
$350.
It's horrible. Absolutely horrible.
No thanks.
But again, I like the baggy stuff. It's not really for me, but I think it looks cool on Jason Day. I thought this stuff was nice enough. One of the people you're not a big fan of,
Akshay Bhatia.
Akshay Bhatia, the Grayson clothes and mixed in with the Callaway stuff, I thought was so nice. The Grayson stuff, I think, is incredible. Luke List had this kind of gray cardigan, and I just think it looks so sophisticated.
JT looks good in the Grayson stuff.
Yeah, and I think it's very professional and sophisticated. Random one, Keegan Bradley, I thought looked really well. I think he's with Flag and Anthem. Okay. I thought just their polos were classy. There was nothing mad about it. What I'm a big fan of was Puma stuff. I'm not sure if you saw much.
You love your Puma stuff. It's so mad.
We missed kind of Fowler because he'd won the par three, but he had this like really cool kind of floral polo stuff on. And I think Puma have just moved up their game in terms of clothes. He wore this like kind of white pants and a dark green polo with little light bits of flowers in them.
Mm.
Just looked class. So Puma, I'm definitely looking at them in the next one with McGurk's. I think their stuff has gone up. Your boy Hovland, Jay Lindeberg stuff was a bit off the wall, kind of black and pink. What did you make of that?
It was muted in comparison to other events.
Yeah, it was.
Other years. I thought it was actually a little on the quieter side. I wanted to see more.
More yeah. Outrageous stuff. I'm just a little bit bored of Adidas and Nike, to be honest.
I agree.
Scheffler, Morikawa, it was just bland. It was
Ludwig looked good, but like
it's
safe.
Safe and it's boring. And it's not even that it's safe, it's just the why did pick was, did you see what Christian Lampert was wearing?
Oh, did I? Sure, I'm wearing the same thing. We're in the G4. Yeah, the man was looking good.
He's the amateur, he's made 27, I think Lamprecht is. But he was wearing the G4 stuff.
He's 9 foot tall as well. That man is huge.
Yeah. The G4 stuff looked so nice. Especially, I think, was it Friday? I think he had this kind of floral, white floral pattern. And then he had this kind of green, really light kind of
cotton hoodie type of thing.
Yeah. It was a hoodie. Yeah. It was really thin material.
Yeah.
And of course, he wore the Galavantours, and actually he wore my Galavantours on Thursday and your ones on Sunday, maybe.
Okay.
So I ended up, I found his G4 heads kind of sent out their the kind of script of the four sets of clothes for the day.
Okay.
And I just thought it was really cool. So I think to me, if we're picking a winners for the Masters, it was Puma and the G4 stuff. I thought was really, really nice.
Stuff looked lovely. Stuff looked really, really good. I guess that's pretty much it for the podcast this week. There's again no DP World Tour action. I think after both of us lost all four of our bets,
we are Tommy Fleetwood. We cannot win on the PGA.
Can't win in America. So let's take a week off, right? Let's give the signature event a break. We'll watch the RBC Heritage kind of. I'm so tired. I've played 54 holes of golf in the last 3 days, much golf.
I'm dying to play. I've got the Masters bug, and every like I look at timesheets, they're absolutely full. I bet every driving range is completely full now in the country. Yeah.
There's a different vibe around golf in Ireland now. Like the Masters is on, it's getting sunnier. Like it's funny how that the two do line up perfectly. Yeah. Golf season is here. Yeah, listen, we'll get out on Wednesday. We've got a busy all year ahead in the golf for the Bogeyman. We're going to have lots more of that coming in the next few days and weeks. But Michael, thank you very much. Guys, thank you for listening, and we'll see you in the next one.
On the tee, Jack Nicklaus.
This is the minute the millions around the world have waited for.
We will allow you to enjoy all of this. They are dancing in the pubs of Dublin. Harrington with an ace.
And we have a shining star at sunset. Rory continues his run to greatness.
The return to glory.